Welcome to the Clement Podcast, where we bring you state and national history locally. We're your hosts,
Jasmine Brand
and Zach Kinslow. If you were just joining us for the first time, thank you for being here. We are recording out of the Clement Railroad Hotel Museum in beautiful downtown Dixon, Tennessee, and aim to bring you interesting tales from the past through the lens of a small southern community.
And today we're going to be talking about that small southern community and its history. Although we talk every episode on this podcast about where we're recording and looking at history through a state, national, and local level, we haven't actually delved into the history of our local community, and that is what we're going to do today.
This is episode 12, Discover Dixon.
And we have a very special guest with us today that you will hear throughout the podcast sharing some of his insights and thoughts about the city, and that is Mayor Don Weiss Jr.
Now, Mayor Weiss holds a special place in the history of our community. He has served as the mayor of the city of Dixon, Tennessee, longer than any other person in the history of our community since the early 90s. He's been mayor of this town. In fact, 36 years in public service. He's the longest serving public servant in the history of the city of Dixon. And we are just overwhelmed and very thrilled to have him on the podcast today.
Thank you, Mayor Weiss, for joining us.
So let's begin this episode by really talking about the area in which we live. So the city of Dixon itself is actually one of the youngest incorporated municipalities in what is today Dixon County, while the county itself is one of the oldest in the state.
We've got 95 counties today, and Dixon was the 25th county to be formed within the state of Tennessee. So we are a very old county.
Dixon County as a whole was originally founded in October of 1803, and we have a very different history here than pretty much everywhere else in the southeastern United States. Because when we look at America before the Civil War, you know, there's a bunch of different ways we can break it down. But one of the ways we can look at the country as a whole in this period is industry versus agriculture. Overwhelmingly, we have an agrarian South where they're growing things, and an industrial North where they're producing manufactured goods. The soil of Dixon County is typically far too rocky to have large-scale agriculture that you would see in other areas. But those rocks that prevented agriculture were full of a great mineral called iron. So as early as the 1790s all the way through the 1940s, Dixon County was a manufacturing hub. It was a producer of iron. In fact, at one point, the largest producer of iron in the southeastern United States. And this is also going to mean that our history here is going to be more closely associated with industrial areas, i.e. at the time, northern states, as opposed to maybe an agrarian southern state, even if those communities tended to be closer in proximity to what is Dixon County today.
Now, of course, when people first came to Dixon County, it was the way that people were coming to a lot of states south and west of New England. So many people who first came to Tennessee, to Dixon County, came via land grant that they received as payment for service in the military or other types of payments from the United States government.
For instance, James Robertson, who his wife Charlotte is who our county seat is named for, Montgomery Bell, they all come here for different reasons, but very similar. Iron was a big draw to this area. But as mentioned, this is going to make us a different culture here, more closely associated with maybe a northern state. So come time of the Civil War, a big question is what's going to happen with Dixon County? How is Dixon County going to move during the Civil War?
And that is something that often surprises people that come to visit the museum and have not necessarily grown up in this area. Dixon County, like Zach said, aligns itself more with the northern states. And in a vote of secession that the state of Tennessee holds before, of course, the Civil War starts, Dixon County votes overwhelmingly to remain with the Union.
Yeah, the vote was February 1861. 94% of the voting population of Dixon County voted to remain with the Union. And this isn't a moralistic vote. It's monetary. Almost everybody in the county works for the iron industry. To secede from the Union would be to cut off pretty much their workforce, pretty much their jobs. So it makes sense from an economic point of view that the culture and the economics are greatly going to influence the politics of the area.
Now, that does not mean that Dickson County was any different when it came to the issues of enslavement. Dickson County did have a very large enslaved population that worked in the iron industry and kept it going. In fact, one person that we talk about here at the museum, James Worley, is responsible for a lot of the processes that they use to refine iron and produce the products of Dickson County.
Right. So it is a great mixture of cultures here in Dickson County, of influences, of politics, of economics, and it all comes together to make something quite unique when we look at the larger picture of the American South or even the nation as a whole. We do secede from the Union along with the state of Tennessee in June of 1861. Kind of at gunpoint, the governor of Tennessee, Isham Harris, threatened Dickson County. If we didn't secede, we would have the Army of Tennessee invade our county, which is not something that the white population here wanted either. So we do what I call a soft secession, where you're not really going to support the Confederacy, but you're also not going to fight the Confederacy. So we have no major battles happen here in this county, and there are Union and Confederate soldiers coming out of this area alike. One of the major events that happens in this area, and when I'm talking about this time period, you know, we have the establishment of our county seat of Charlotte, Tennessee, founded in 1804. Van Leer's coming, White Bluff is starting to form, Burns, Tennessee, you've got all of these places kind of popping up around the county. Now, just south of Charlotte, there was really nothing at the time, but the Civil War is inherently going to lead to the creation of what becomes the city of Dixon.
And as Zach said, there were residents of Dixon County that joined both the Union forces and the Confederate forces, and several formerly enslaved men joined the Union, and they would be part of what was known as the 12th and 13th U.S. Colored Infantry. And those two units would be sent to Dickson County to help construct and defend a Union railroad to connect supplies from the Tennessee River through to Nashville.
At the time, there was no connecting railroad and very few roads in the South. This is a time before the federal government is building roads. So each individual state is responsible for road building, for infrastructure projects. It wouldn't be until the 1950s with the implementation of the interstate system, which we'll talk about here shortly, that the federal government gets into road building. And so roads are very poor. However, in the South, all the waterways kind of connect. Look at any major city in a southern state. They tend to be built on water. That was our highway system. We didn't need a lot of roads. We didn't need a lot of railroads prior to this because the rivers had always connected us. The problem is the Cumberland River, come time of the Civil War, is not conducive enough for this type of mobilization. There's a little bit of a drought in early 1862 when Nashville falls to the Union, so that is not as conducive for these large gunships and barges that normally would be facilitated on the Cumberland. And there's always that fear of what if the Confederates cut off part of the river, then there goes the whole supply line. So it was General Ulysses S. Grant, who would later become the 18th President of the United States, who decided to raise the 12th and 13th USCI and have them lay 78 miles of track by hand, connecting Nashville, our capital, to Johnsonville on the Tennessee River. Now, these steam trains moving east to west are going to need to stop and refuel coal and water at some point along their way. Halfway is the logical place to do that. And what becomes the city of Dixon is the geographic halfway point. So every train would have to stop in this community to refuel and continue its journey, meaning we were originally founded as a Union military railroad work town in service to the American Army. Now, the war ends in 1865. We are still halfway between the river and the capital. That is a very important place to be. So what happens is everything is going to build up around this new community, which was originally known as Milepost 42, because we were about 42 miles from Nashville. Now, as we've gotten bigger as communities, Nashville and Dixon, we have gotten closer. So we are no longer 42 miles from Nashville, but at one point we were.
And of course, around Milepost 42 and all of these refueling stations and different things that the railroad needed, a town would crop up. Different resources for people passing through, especially as the rail line was going to grow into accommodating passengers and other things that needed to be moved, freight, essentially. What would become the city of Dixon gets a name, Smeedsville or Sneedsville, depending on who you're talking to, and it starts to grow.
So much so that by 1873, the first charter is granted to what becomes the city of Dixon, and that is also the point where the name of the town is changed from either Smeedsville or Sneedsville to its modern name, Dixon. There is up for some debate on that. Most likely it was done for the post office being named Dixon. There was a Sneedsville in Hancock County, Tennessee, and it might have been confusing for mail. They incorporate in 1873 as the town of Dixon, which was named after the county, and the county is named after Dr. William Dixon, who was a member of Congress. He also was the Speaker of the Tennessee State House of Representatives at the time that the county was formed in 1803 out of parts of Robertson and Montgomery County. But the original town of Dixon is not going to last very long, only about a decade before the charter is revoked. And what's more interesting about it is it seems to have been revoked voluntarily.
It was. And this is, of course, the time of Carrie Nation and the continuation and the popularization of the Prohibition movement. And Tennessee had a law that if you wanted to serve alcohol, you had to be incorporated as an area, a town, village, city, whatever it might be. And Dixon did not want any part of it. There were many people coming through on the railroad, lots of strangers in town all the time, and they decided to ask the state to unincorporate them, to revoke their charter. And that was done on March 16th of 1883. And, you know, this seems maybe like it would have been a drastic move, but I think they went through, what, like 10 sheriffs in the matter of a very short span of time. There was a high rate of crime, there was prostitution, there were, you know, all sorts of things linked to the alcohol establishments in the town at the time, that the town of Dixon just had had enough. So that is why they went to that. And in the time after the charter was abolished, they were able to clean up the town and get back on their feet and take it in a direction that they wanted it to go in. About 16 to 17 years later, they decided that, yeah, they could be incorporated again. So once again, it incorporated in 1899 and then was officially chartered as Dixon by the Tennessee General Assembly in 1925.
And that's the charter we have worked under since. We have not unincorporated since 1899, and God willing, we never will again. Now, at this point, the population of Dixon is not very large at all. It's less than 1,500 people, but we are a growing community. And as the railroad continues to grow in the area, we see a lot of benefits coming from that. We have a lot of traveling salesmen in the area. In 1913, prior to 1925, of course, Mr. J.T. Halbrick builds a large railroad hotel across the street from the depot that is today the old Hotel Halbrick, the Clement Railroad Hotel Museum, where we broadcast this podcast out of.
And just to note here, I think while this building has remained the same, a lot of downtown has kind of changed. And we'll let Mayor Weiss talk a little bit about how that has developed over the years.
Where Holland Park is, used to be the paper office. And back in the 40s and 50s, that's where all the paper boys picked up their papers to run their paper routes. My dad had his parents' car there one day, and they had an apartment above their house over on High Street. And there was a family that lived in it, and they would borrow the car every now and then. This particular lady came by and told my dad she needed to borrow the car, and he gave her the keys, and it was parked out here on Railroad Street. And back then there were three tracks instead of just one. And somehow she got crossways on the tracks, accelerated the car, flipped her around, and she drove up the steps through the front doors of the museum. And the car ended up lodged against the back stairwell. And there was a gentleman sitting on the bench out front when all this happened. But he was unhurt. And there's a newspaper article on that I have been unable to find it. I know my dad has it, but I've heard my dad talk about that story for years. But the lady really did have permission to use the car. So,
We've always been told that the patch of wooden floor by the front door was replaced due to that accident. Little trivia fact for our listeners there. But in reality, most people at this time were going to be using the train. The train still carried passengers to and from Nashville or wherever they needed to go. And of course, that's why the hotel was built here in the first place, was to accommodate those passengers, along with several other hotels in town and a lot of the businesses. And it's an integral part of Dixon's identity.
Dixon is a rail town. It was founded for the railroad. It's supported by the railroad. The county, remember, it's founded for iron. Around the early 1940s, the iron vein that had always supported and fed, basically the economy of this county, is starting to run dry. There's only so much iron in the ground, and once it's gone, it is gone. Well, it's not too long after that, the federal government starts road building, i.e. the interstate system across the United States. So we have a perfect storm for an economic downturn at a time when the country is actually booming economically. We have the iron industry dying. We have railroads going out. So what is Dixon going to do? The state of Tennessee had a little bit. We saw massive downturns in rail towns across the country in this period, and most of them are dying economically. Dixon had a little bit of a benefit that the first major highway to run from East Tennessee all the way to West Tennessee, from Bristol to Memphis, it'd be State Route 1, and would later become part of U.S. Highway 70, which is going to go all the way from North Carolina to California, so a transcontinental highway, if you will, that's going to run right through the city of Dixon. So it is going to support it in that way.
Main Street seems to have had this amazing resilience as well, despite everything it's been through. And honestly, I think Mayor Weiss can probably speak to this from a firsthand perspective, living and growing up in Dixon.
I basically grew up on Main Street. The Main Street I remember from the 60s and that my parents remember from the 50s and the 40s was really what Main Street is today. When I was growing up, the city limits ended where Walgreens is.
And today it goes all the way out to the interstate, or maybe even a little bit beyond. But of course, I'm getting ahead of myself, because it is, in the grand scheme of Dixon's history, a more recent addition.
Come in the early 1960s, late 1950s, the U.S. interstate system is going to come to the state of Tennessee. Frank G. Clement is governor of the state at this point, and he noticed what was happening to his hometown, to rail towns across the nation. So actually, if you look at U.S. Interstate 40, it runs west out of Nashville, drops slightly south, and then continues west. That drop is to run through Dixon today. The symptom, I guess, of the interstate is the death of rail throughout the country, but it is that same interstate system that's going to get rid of the railroad, that's going to bring vital signs and life back to what otherwise would have been a dying community. We were saved by the roads themselves, our infrastructure, which we still have great infrastructure here in the city of Dixon today.
I don't think a lot of people realize that between Nashville and Memphis, the 172 exit, which is Dixon, is the largest commercial exit between Nashville and Memphis, except for probably the one in Jackson, Tennessee. So we're probably about the second largest exit from a commercial fuel station standpoint. And fortunately, the city proper, our downtown, is only about 4 miles from our interstate. So I think that's really what's made Dixon the kind of the hub of economic development in Dixon County itself, because we were so close to the interstate. And when people come to our downtown now, they fuel out by the interstate and they shop out there. The city of Dixon itself has really become a regional shopping area.
It really has. And something that is really interesting about Dixon's history is it's always supported women-owned and women-run businesses. The hotel itself, of course, was run by Bell and Maybell and several other women throughout its history. And even Main Street, as you look at the different businesses that have been there over the years, there have been quite a few that are run or owned by women, and that remains true through to this day. However, Main Street wasn't always as busy and thriving as it is to this day, and it's been built back in large part due to different steps that the city has taken in order to bring back vitality to this area.
Oh, I think the downtown project that we started back in 2009 has been instrumental in bringing Dixon back, is the word I'm going to use there. Our downtown area had really suffered. When we started that first phase of our downtown project, we were probably about 65% unoccupied in terms of retail space downtown. I think at that time, House Blends was the only restaurant still around. Most of our retail space at that time was your older retail stores that had kind of survived every hit ever thrown at them. Reagan's and Hodges and Fuzzles, they were still around. They had survived whatever had been thrown at us in terms of the economy and everything else. And I've said this many times, and you may have heard me say this, but I've always felt like that if a city loses its downtown, it loses its identity. Our true identity is our downtown.
And a big part of our downtown identity, aside from the businesses and restaurants and everything else that makes up downtown, is our school. We have Dixon County High School really close to downtown. The middle school is here. And a lot of Dixonian residents or people from Dixon have fond memories of the high school, and it is very intertwined into the fabric of what makes this city up.
I remember when we had three high schools in the county, Dixon, Charlotte, and White Bluff. I remember going to Dixon Elementary in the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. That was about the time they started talking about closing the three high schools and having one county high school, and they were going to put it here in the city. At that time, it was called Dixon County Senior High School. It was 10, 11, and 12. You know, as an eighth grader, you always look forward to going to the high school. The beginning of my ninth grade year, they opened Dixon County High School. So as a freshman or a ninth grader in high school, we only got to go to the old high school one time, one year. I look back on that, and we didn't know kids from White Bluff. We didn't know kids, very few kids from Charlotte or White Bluff, either one. Maybe knew a few from Burns. Some of my best friends in high school ended up being from Charlotte, White Bluff, Burns. And that was a very smooth transition to one school, which now we've got Creekwood. It really gets back to all of us kind of working together to try to keep Dixon in the forefront and keep us progressive. The bottom line to everything, and I think it goes back to the very beginning of Dixon, is it takes everybody working together to have the community you want. And that's what we've always tried to do.
And of course, working together and that unity is something that you've always done in a very long career in politics here in the city of Dixon. 36 years in public service. You are the longest serving public servant in the history of our city. 30 years as mayor. Since 1899, we haven't had a mayor serve as long as Mayor Don Weiss here. So must be doing something really, really great. So how kind of did all that start when we look at your long and storied career?
Well, truthfully, I never had a desire to get into politics. I got talked into it by one of my best friends, Miss Lou Ann Greer. In 1987, I got talked into running for a vacant seat on the council with no idea that I would ever become mayor. I got appointed mayor in 93 and then ran for the first time in 95. And really never thought I would do it as long as I've done it. Having grown up here and knowing what Dixon was in the 50s and 60s, I always wanted my kids to see that. So that's what always drove me to stay involved in city government. I think my memory of the 50s and 60s and 70s in Dixon is kind of what's driven me to do that and try to emulate the community that I was able to grow up in and move that forward. And I hope the next person will do the same thing.
And we hope the same, because we understand that great leaders make a great community. And I want to thank you for your service to our community, to our city, and to our state as a whole, really. When we look at the larger history of the United States as a whole, and particularly with this podcast. What we do here at the Clement Museum is we bring state and national history locally. That's something I say every single episode. We start with these giant historical ideas and run them through the lens of our community, this great place we live called Dixon, Tennessee, average America. But when we really understand our community, when we understand our home, where we live, we understand how the United States as a whole really operates. We understand those American values. We understand the wants, the needs, the triumphs, the failures, the successes of the United States through a community that's like many communities across our nation. If we can understand an area like Dixon, Tennessee, we can understand our country as a whole on a much deeper level, a much more complex level. And that's what we do here at the Clement Museum. That's what we do here at the Clement Podcast. So in ending this episode today, I want to say that I am thankful for the leaders we have in our community, like Mayor Weiss. Thank you for the time you took to come speak with us today for this episode. And that is where we will leave it. So as always, at the Clement Podcast, take us out, Frank.
Precious Lord, take our hand, lead us on. Thank you.
The Clement Railroad Hotel Museum is funded in part under an agreement with the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation through the Tennessee Historical Commission. A special thank you to our sponsors, Bill Freeman, Gus Arendelle, and Springer Mountain Farms.